Chapter 21. I dropped the suture needle into the tray and stepped back to survey the finished job. Well, though I say it myself, that looks rather nice. Tristan leant over the unconscious dog and examined the neat incision with its row of regular stitches. Very pretty indeed, my boy. Couldn't have done better myself. The big black Labrador lay peacefully on the table, his tongue lolling, his eyes glazed and unseeing. He had been brought in with an ugly growth over his ribs, and I had decided that it was a simple lipoma, quite benign and very suitable for surgery. And so it had turned out. The tumour had come away with almost ridiculous ease, round, intact, and shining like a hard-boiled egg from its shell. No hemorrhage, no fear of recurrence. The unsightly swelling had been replaced by this tidy scar, which would be invisible in a few weeks. I was pleased. "We'd better keep him up here till he comes round," I said. "Give me a hand to get him onto one of these blankets." We made the dog comfortable in front of an electric stove, and I left to start my morning round. It was during lunch when we first heard the strange sound. It was something between a moan and a howl, starting quite softly but rising to a piercing pitch before shuddering back down the scale to silence. Siegfried looked up, startled, from his soup.
"What in God's name's that?"
"Must be that dog I operated on this morning," I replied. "The old one does that coming out of barbiturates. I expect he'll stop soon." Siegfried looked at me doubtfully.
"Well, I hope so.
I could soon get tired of that.
Gives me the creeps."
We went through and looked at the dog. Pulse strong, respirations deep and regular, mucous membranes a good colour. He was still stretched out, immobile, and the only sign of returning consciousness was the howl, which seemed to have settled down into a groove of 1 every 10 seconds.
"Yes, he's perfectly all right," Siegfried said.
"But what a bloody noise!
Let's get out of here."
Lunch was finished hastily and in silence, except for the ceaseless background wailing. Siegfried had scarcely swallowed his last mouthful before he was on his feet.
"Well, must fly. Got a lot on this morning. Tristan, I think it will be a good idea to bring that dog through to the sitting room and put him by the fire. Then you could stay by him and keep an eye on him."
Tristan was stunned.
"You mean I have to stay in the same room as that noise all afternoon?"
"Yes. I mean just that. We can't send him home as he is, and I don't want anything to happen to him. He needs care and attention. Well, perhaps you'd like me to hold his paw, or perhaps wheel him round the marketplace."
"Don't give me any more of your bloody cheek. You stay with the dog, and that's an order."
Tristan and I stretchered the heavy animal along the passage on the blankets. Then I had to leave for the afternoon round. I paused and looked back at the big black form by the fire, and Tristan crouched miserably in his chair. The noise was overpowering. I closed the door hurriedly. It was dark when I got back, and the old house hung over me, black and silent against the frosty sky. Silent, that is, except for the howling which still echoed along the passage and filtered eerily into the deserted street. I glanced at my watch as I slammed the car door. It was 6 o'clock, so Tristan had had 4 hours of it. I ran up the steps and along the passage, and when I opened the sitting room door, the noise jarred in my head. Tristan was standing with his back to me, looking through the French window into the darkness of the garden. His hands were deep in his pockets. Tufts of cotton wool drooped from his ears.
"Well, how's it going?" I asked.
There was no reply, so I walked over and tapped him on the shoulder. The effect was spectacular. Tristan leapt into the air and corkscrewed round. His face was ashen, and he was trembling violently.
"God help us, James, you nearly killed me there! I can't hear a thing through these damned earplugs, except the dog, of course. Nothing keeps that out."
I knelt by the Labrador and examined him. The dog's condition was excellent, but, except for a faint eye reflex, there was no sign that he was regaining consciousness, and all the time there were the piercing, evenly spaced howls. "He's taking a hell of a long time to come out of it," I said.
"Has he been like this all afternoon?"
"Yes, just like that. Not one bit different. And don't waste any sympathy on him, the yowling devil. He's as happy as a sandboy down by the fire, doesn't know a thing about it. But how about me? My nerves are about shot to bits listening to him hour after hour. Much more of it, you'll have to give me a shot, too." He ran a shaking hand through his hair, and a twitching started in his cheek. I took his arm. Well, come through and eat. You'll feel better after some food. I led him unresisting into the dining room. Siegfried was in excellent form over the meal. He seemed to be in a mood of exhilaration that monopolized the conversation, but he did not once refer to the shrill obbligato from the other room. There was no doubt, however, that it was still getting through to Tristan. As we were leaving the room, Siegfried put his hand on my shoulder. Remember, we've got that meeting in Broughton tonight, James? Old Reeves on diseases of sheep. He's usually very good. Pity you can't come too, Tristan, but I'm afraid you'll have to stay with the dog till he comes round. Tristan flinched as if he'd been struck. Oh, no, not another session with that bloody animal. He's driving me mad. I'm afraid there's nothing else for it. James or I could have taken over tonight, but we have to show up at this meeting. It would look bad if we missed it. Tristan stumbled back into the room, and I put on my coat. As I went out into the street, I paused for a moment and listened. The dog was still howling. The meeting was a success. It was held in one of Broughton's lush hotels, and, as usual, the best part was the get-together of the vets in the bar afterwards. It was infinitely soothing to hear the other man's problems and mistakes, especially the mistakes. It amused me to look round the crowded room and try to guess what the little knots of men were talking about. Well, that man over there, bent double and slashing away at the air with one hand, he was castrating a colt in the standing position. And the one with his arm out at full stretch, his fingers working busily at nothing, almost certainly foaling a mare, probably correcting a carpal flexion, and doing it effortlessly, too. Veterinary surgery was a childishly simple matter in a warm bar with a few drinks inside you.